And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning, and you're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio with me, Greg Hughes, and we're with you until 12 o'clock, and we've got a busy show lined up for you. Lots of different stuff coming up over the next wee while. We want to hear from you as well, by the way. Maybe you've got a comment on some of the stuff we're featuring, or indeed you wish to pass on your own information. 086 60 25 000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25 000, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000, and send your emails to comments@highlandradio.com. and if you want to watch the show, you know the story, we're streaming on YouTube, Facebook and on the X platform. And digging through the papers, it's all Rory McIlroy. I'll read some quotes from Micheál Martin a little later on, but obviously the papers have gone to town on it. Maybe people, especially those who don't like golf, are a bit bored of it. We're not talking about that today, but a bit of a debate raging online as to, well, A, which county is the most prolific in producing top sports stars. I mean, we're in for a shout there across multiple disciplines, but Rory's county is pretty good, it has to be said. Georgie Best and many others out of his county. But the other debate is going, is Rory McIlroy the best Irish sports person ever? And it's raging on social media. What do you think? Do you think what he achieved puts him into that bracket? Or perhaps maybe you've got a different person that you believe to be the best sport person Ireland has ever produced. So maybe you want to suggest who's the best sports person out of the Northwest? Who's the best sports person this island has ever produced? Is it Rory McIlroy? You can text that in to 086 60 25 000. Who is our best sports person ever? And I think golf fans will go with McIlroy, but I mean, obviously, if you take a passing interest in it, you probably don't really see the significance of his achievements. But interesting, maybe. I'll think on myself. I don't know who our best... it's not necessarily who your favourite sports person ever is. But I don't know who... I don't know who I might pick as the best all round on off the island of Ireland. I'll leave it up to you guys. 086 60 25 000. Obviously, a lot of sort of justice news about with the Garda conferences ongoing at the moment. The Irish Times has some quotes from Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan. And I think it's important to mention these things, because what happens is these ideas are floated and the reaction determines whether or not they're enforced in the end. And Jim O'Callaghan wants to see greater Garda stop and search powers. I wonder what you guys think about this. Minister for Justice Jim O'Callaghan is progressing plans to grant Garda stronger stop and search powers, despite a report commissioned by his department showing they do little to combat crime. The report also found the approach, which has been adopted by UK police forces, created resentment towards the police and harmed community relations. In February, Mr. O'Callaghan said new laws were needed to give Gardaí greater power to stop and search people they suspect of carrying knives. This following a number of high-profile knife attacks in Dublin, including attacks on three people in Stony Batter on February 9th, and the alleged murder of Quham Babatunde in the city centre following a concert. In 2021, the department created a group to examine approaches to reducing knife crime. This was chaired by the Minister of State, James Brown, and formed part of the department's anti-social behaviour form. So obviously there's been an increase in knife crime in this country of late, which is increasing the need for further stops and searches. But I mean, like, we'll see what happens in England. They've just announced that they're banning samurai swords in Britain, because so many attacks are happening in the cities with samurai swords. But it's not banning the swords, you know what I mean? It's not swords that are going out slashing people. It's people, and you need to have enforcement, and these things need to be seen as very serious crimes and people need to be locked up. But I wonder what has led to an increase in knife crime in this country that's led to a need for greater stop and search powers. What do you think about that? Do you think it's a good idea? Would it be something that might make you feel safer walking around the place if you knew that people would be less likely to carry an offensive weapon because they might feel they could be stopped and searched by Gardaí? But what happens even if people are stopped and searched? I don't know. Anyway, it's another layer of law over the top of society, and I wonder, is it really maybe not addressing what the root cause is, and that's, people more inclined to carry knives? The Irish Daily Mail this morning, women don't won't be reimbursed for the cost of hormone replacement therapy that was due to become free, a state of affairs that has been labelled insulting. Now, this doesn't surprise me. It would be unusual and I'm not saying I don't think it should happen, but it'd be unusual if a date slipped for something then to be backdated. There's lots of commitments and promises made by government. Auto-enrolment pensions, the minimum wage, for example. The minimum wage was due to increase. It's going to be pushed back. So when it is increased, obviously, you know, it isn't going to be backdated. I'm not saying that shouldn't be the case, but this is one of those stories, I think, where someone's asked a question, is it to be backdated? Someone says no, and they've made that the story. Well, legislation to provide free HRT came into effect on January 1st, but its implementation was delayed in a row between government and pharmacists, with no date set for its commencement. And the Irish Daily Mail can reveal that the scheme will not be backdated when it is finally implemented. Health Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeill has confirmed pharmacies will only be reimbursed for the cost of the medication from the date the measures formally commence. As I say, that doesn't surprise me. Some quotes from the Taoiseach as it relates to, as I flagged at the start of the show there, Rory McIlroy's achievement. He seemed to be very emotional about it all. Taoiseach Micheál Martin, US President Donald Trump and Britain's King Charles led political tributes to Rory McIlroy after he made history by winning the Masters and completing a career Grand Slam. So I kind of watched, it was in the background and there was other noise when Micheál Martin was talking about McIlroy. Did he have tears in his eyes? Was he emotional? He did make some sort of a reference to falling and getting back up again and falling and getting back up again, which made me think of Jesus Christ and the cross around Easter time. I'm not sure if he was sort of saying Rory McIlroy's achievement is sort of in that same ballpark. But anyway, he did look like he was very upset. I haven't seen that before. Especially given all the serious items that he's asked to comment on. Or maybe he just had watery eyes that day. The achievement cemented Rory McIlroy's position amongst the best golfers of all time. Mr. Martin said he was left breathless by the roller coaster ending to the Irish golfer's near two-decade pursuit of the green jacket at arguably the most famous golf course in the world, Augusta National. It was an incredible evening, and we were all up into the early hours of this morning. Apparently, their family WhatsApp group was going crazy. On to the Irish Daily Sun again. I just want to mention this because it's a story that if you don't hear about it today, you may not realise it's going to happen. The Sun, Ireland's Defence Forces Special Ops Unit, and I'm not sure, and this is not to be in any way critical of it, I'm not sure you were aware that we did have a Special Ops Unit, but we do. They're set to get a new €46 million HQ and training centre. The Army Rangers Wing are a secretive elite unit in Ireland's Defence Forces. So secretive, in fact, I didn't know they existed. The Rangers were involved in the most dangerous military missions. Back in 2021, they were deployed to Kabul to evacuate Irish citizens there after the Taliban had taken control of Afghanistan. And I believe they had to go on a different country's plane because we didn't have a plane that could go in and out, if that's the same story. Rangers were also tasked with dropping out of helicopters to forcibly take control of the MV Matthews ship in 2023 as part of the one of the country's largest ever drug seizures. I remember that footage too. So, $46 million for a new HQ down at the Corra. Now, on to the Irish Daily Mirror. I don't know, how interested have you been in this story of Katy Perry and a few other women's brief entry into space? 11 minutes they were in flight, I think it was. They went up in this rocket, this private rocket. Then the rocket separates from the pod in which they were located. It floats around in space for a bit and then falls to the earth with parachutes deploying, and they all got out safe. Pop star Katy Perry made history as part of the first all-female group spacecraft. The suborbital mission run by Amazon billionaire Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin marked a milestone in private space exploration. It lasted 10 minutes and 23 seconds and reached the Kármán line, 62 miles, about 100 kilometres above sea level, the recognised boundary of space, and the capsule spent 4 minutes in microgravity before descending with parachutes and landing safely in the Texas desert. It carried Katy Perry along with aerospace engineer Aisha Bowe, US TV anchor Gail King, entrepreneur Amanda Nguyen, film producer Kerri-Anne Flynn and Lauren Sanchez's fiancé of 61-year-old tycoon Jeff. Now, what is this fantastic? Is this one small step for womankind, a great leap for mankind, or whatever it might be? Like, the struggle I have with these stories is that there's an awful lot of stuff going around at the moment telling us that we are destroying the planet, right? And you will see that there is big stories that are going to be covered today about how climate is changing, and we're going to have to change our crops because harvests are drying out, and we're going to have to do our bit. And yet we have billionaires living completely different lives, right? Spending millions upon millions upon millions on these rockets. Effectively, Bezos and Elon Musk are in a peeing competition, right? So they're spending billions trying to get into space and fly people to space. You know, there's people starving all over the world, and then we're asked to contribute, and we're happy to do that, right? But maybe these guys might be better off spending a bit of money in supporting mankind themselves. And also, you know, you've got the likes of that TV presenter who I'm sure goes on and does interviews telling people that they need to stop burning solid fuel or putting triple glazed windows and stuff like that. And yet there they are floating around in space. And it's not even really space, is it? It just is. I think it's makes a mockery of a lot of stuff anyway. But again, maybe that's just me being cranky because I only got 5 hours sleep last night. And finally, the Irish Daily Star this morning. A dead spider in a loaf of brown bread and a pack of muesli full of maggots were among almost 5,000 consumer complaints made to Food Safety Authority of Ireland's advice line last year. Disgusting. But what's the most disgusting thing you've ever found in your food? Or what's the most stomach-churning thing along these lines that you've experienced? Come on, guys. I know you have your stories. Get them into me. 086 60 25,000, or WhatsApp or text, or give us a call on 0749125000. Can you beat a dead spider in a loaf of brown bread or muesli full of maggots? Well, a total of 8,596 complaints and queries were handled by the support line or handled in 24, with the number of complaints increasing by almost 14%. All complaints received by the authority in 24 were followed up and investigated by food inspectors throughout the country. So a lot of foreign objects have been found in food, including a metal pin in pre-packed prawns, a piece of plastic in a milkshake, and a metal nail in a takeaway meal. A snail in a box of grapes, a live insect in a burrito bowl, which sounds lovely, and a large piece of metal in a chocolate biscuit. Can you beat any of those in your life experiences? 086 60 25,000. Okay, back shortly. We say good morning now to Tony Grant. Hi, Tony. Thank you for your time today.
Hello, Greg. Good morning. Hi.
Your story is one of your cancer treatment. Where do you want to begin?
Last Monday, I had an appointment in Sligo Hospital at 9:15 for some surgery in the daycare ward to remove cancer from my face. And I was travelling on public transport, so I went down on Sunday on the 64 bus from Derry to Galway. Got off at Sligo and then had booked into a hotel, and I was on time that next on Monday morning for my appointment. And because it was a day ward, I needed to be back on that bus at 3:00 to get back to Letterkenny to get my connection on another bus back to Buncrana. So that was the deadline, 3:00 to be in the bus station in Sligo. And so I needed to leave the hospital, you know, on a taxi at probably 2:30 to get me there in time, and that worked fine. I did get the taxi out, and I made the bus, and was on the bus. But the hiccup was it hadn't stopped bleeding, the wound.
Well, would it be unusual, Tony, considering? I mean, obviously, it's a significant operation, not a major one, but just like at 8:45, that was what time your appointment was at. what do you just go straight in and it's done, or what?
Yes. Well, by 10 o'clock, I was in the operating room and operating theatre, which, you know, and it's the surgeon and the understudy and five or six people around the table. So it was a shock to me that it was such a big event, actually. I wasn't expecting that. But however, you know, everything was fine. Everything was fine. Apart from something that nobody could control, I suppose, that the bleeding didn't stop before I left the hospital.
Yeah, but you were discharged. And, like, I just want to get down to that bit, Tony. Like, did they say, unfortunately, Mr. Grant, the wound is still bleeding, we're going to have to keep you for a while just to try and stem that flow? Or is it a case of, right, that's it, now off you go, heading back to Donegal, however you might do it? I'm just curious of the immediate aftercare of this operation.
Yeah, they said, look, if that continues, the surgeon said it will stop. And he was right, it did stop, you know. It stopped at 10 o'clock at night when I was in bed. Finally stopped when my head went down on the pillow. And, you know, that's the thing. He said, if you have any problems with it, go to your GP. That's with the advice, leaving the hospital. But actually, when I was leaving the hospital, even the non-medical staff stopped me and said, what happened to you? And, you know, they're used to people coming in and out all the time. But I said, sarcastically, you know, because my mood wasn't great whenever I was suffering. Well, I felt, I wasn't suffering. I was just had a procedure, and I'm a good warrior. And I'm 76, but I'm a fit man. And So they said to me, what happened to you? And I said sarcastically back, I tripped on the stairs. And the reply was, well, you should see somebody before you leave the hospital. You shouldn't leave the hospital like that. And I said, no, I just had a procedure. I climbed down right away. I knew I was overstepped the line. And I said, I had a procedure. I'm okay. So went out, got into the taxi and was back on the bus. But they gave me plenty of bandages or whatever to mop up the blood. Now, it wasn't bleeding profusely. It was a drip. That's what it was. And uncomfortable and all the rest of it. And lots of gazing from the general public when I got off at Letterkenny. So there you are. It was stressful.
It was stressful. And, you know, I think you're quite reasonable in what you sent us, in that, you know, if it is a case that the likes of yourself have to travel, which is a really quite a long way and a complicated, I mean, it was like plane, trains and automobiles coming home, you know, the taxi and two buses, that if we are having to travel to Sligo or Galway or Dublin for these procedures, you know, not everyone has the finances or necessarily the ability to book overnight accommodation and sort out all the connections and all that type of stuff. You're of the view that there should be, if we are forced to travel, there should be accommodation provided. Is that what you think?
Yes, I think a solution to an awful lot of the problems of appointments, etc., and management of patients would be a non-medical accommodation close to the hospital or on the hospital grounds that would be non-medical, and that people could book into, and then before, afterwards, whenever, just in case something goes wrong or you're not completely ready to go home. But you don't actually need, I didn't need any extra medical care as it turned out. But, you know, just as it turned out, I might have needed. What if it hadn't? The bleeding hadn't stopped when I went to sleep and it bled all night. You know that type of thing.
Well, what if the advice was that you need to stay actually till we keep an eye on you? You would have missed the bus, maybe not been able to booking anywhere. Yes. You could have found yourself standing in Sligo town or wherever, outside the hospital at 5 o'clock in the evening. You know,
that was my worry. That was my anxiety there now. I want to get home. And the only way I could get home is that 3 o'clock deadline. And they understood that. And they had no bed for me. So we were in a catch-22 situation here now. What are we going to do? And I know they didn't want to let me leave. They were telling, you know, they would have liked me to stay longer. But it was me setting the deadline, really, for the bus. And unless, well, if I hadn't done that, I would have had to get stay another night in a hotel, right? So, and that would have been, you know, now in my stressed situation, I would have to go booking a hotel and finding a hotel and et cetera, you know, because I hadn't booked one at that stage.
No.
Or maybe get a taxi from Sligo back home in my stressful situation. That would have cost me something.
Well, a couple hundred, £300. See, it's just some people would see it sort of as a health tax, you know, a geography tax, in that, you know, if you're from Sligo or Mayo or Leitrim, you know, these services are very, very local to you. But obviously you're in North Donegal and you have to go from one bus to another and taxis and all that type of stuff. It's an interesting it's an interesting insight, Tony. Fair play to you anyway for getting home safe.
Yeah, but it wasn't an isolated incident.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm not just an isolated incident, you know. I never thought I'd find myself in that situation. But I was on a bus, the John McGinley bus to Dublin one time from Buncrana, and there was a man distressed further up the bus, and I could see it. And when we stopped in Monaghan for the comfort stop, I approached him, and he wasn't able to talk to me. He was so stressed. And when he got off at Dublin Airport, I got off as well, and I spoke to him, and we walked towards the terminal. And I said, are you traveling out? Are you flying? And he said, oh, no, I'm going in here to sit on a bench all night, because I've got an early appointment in Beaumont Hospital in the morning for cancer care. And he pulled up his trouser leg when we sat down to have a cup of hot chocolate, and he showed me his wound. I was horrified. On his leg, the open wound. And that poor man, you know, at the same age as myself about that. I said, why didn't you reschedule for another later in the day? Why, you know, and he said, I didn't want to, because they might have put me at the bottom of a list. So
his plan, his plan, he sounds like he was from Donegal. His plan was to, he actually had planned to go down on the bus, get off at the airport, sleep overnight in the airport, because obviously he could blend in with travellers. That was his plan. And then make his way for an early appointment in Beaumont the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's horrendous, Tony. And no one's going to admit to that, because you might feel a little embarrassed to do so. It's only the fact that we can sort of hear it third hand from you.
Well, actually, Greg, I know you get so many calls about so many issues, and you had, you know, Dr. Keira Steele on yesterday talking about it, and we're all with her on this, and Rosina Doherty Toner, you know, her campaign outside the hospital for better cancer care. But, you know, I was so incensed. I spoke to Highland Radio about this at the time, and thankful to them for airing it. But, you know, nothing seems to change. I rang Beaumont Hospital to make that complaint. Why couldn't you reschedule so that he could get the bus and be in Dublin Airport, say, at 12 o'clock and that next day, and then make his later appointment? So that would have worked. I complained to the hospital on his behalf, not mentioning his name, and they put me onto a PR company to discuss it.
Wow. So, do you think there should be? I mean, firstly, there's a complication with later appointments if you go to Galway, for an example, because you can't get home, or Sligo, for that matter. But I just wonder if there should be, you know, more flexibility for people from the Northwest travelling these great distances. In other words, it's the responsibility of the hospital to take into consideration where we're travelling from, and at that time offer, you know, more flexible times, because we're already disadvantaged by having to travel great distance. Maybe they could work with us and say, we understand, by the way, from our notes that you're coming from Donegal. With that in mind, you know, would a 2:30 appointment suit you better than an 8:30 appointment? Now, maybe someone's got a hotel room and the 8:30 suits them, but, you know, to offer that flexibility given people's geographical removal from the location of the hospital. But that doesn't happen. But these are simple things that you think could happen.
The system is so chunky, it can't be flexible. You know, when I've been attending Sligo on numerous occasions with getting different parts dealt with, different spots on the head and so on the rest of my body. And I have asked him about this situation to schedule me earlier, the first patient in, please, you know, because I have to get the bus at 3 o'clock. This is a regular thing. Mm-hmm. And they're unable to do it. And the next minute they get the letter again, and it's a later date, a later time on that day. And I just ignore that and go in, and the medical staff are great. I explain it to them that I have to get that 3 o'clock bus, and they said, "Oh, it's okay. You can take you in first."
You're unique, I think, Tony, in that you're a very obviously strong advocate for yourself. Yeah, a lot of us wouldn't. You know, it's like that guy that went down to Dublin. He's fearful that if he takes on the system, he gets bumped to the bottom of the list. Do you know what I mean? You've experienced. You understand that. So, just to be clear, there's no way for you to get back from Sligo to Buncrana on public transport after 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock is the last bus.
Is the last bus out of Sligo that I can possibly take an hour so that I can get home. Yes.
Right. Okay. And that's because of. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Because I could go on to Derry and then get the McGonagall bus back to Buncrana. Yes, that's possible.
But anything's possible, Tony. But it doesn't mean it's realistic.
It. Yeah, okay. I haven't done it, but I did the math, and it looked like it was possible.
Well, you could get a bus to Dublin. You could get a bus to Burton Port, head out in the Blue Ferry Tower and more, get the next one back, and then get an. I mean, you could do it, but it doesn't mean it's the thing you would do. You know, to have to go to Derry and then loop back up the peninsula on a second bus would make no. I mean, it's possible, but that's not. Really, a service.
You would beat the clock. You would just about beat the clock at the last bus out of Derry to Buncrana. Actually, is 6:10. So you would make that one, and you could make the one from Letterkenny to Buncrana the bees at 17:40, 6:20. So I made that one. But you see, whenever you get out at Letterkenny, you're able to go to the toilet, and I was able to go into Mr. Chippy and get a wrap, and it was beautiful.
Lovely.
And the only trouble is, when I started to munch on it, there was more blood coming. So, and I was hungry because I hadn't eaten from the night before. Mm. And so, you know what I mean?
There's a lot of people probably saw you that evening wondering what was going on, and they're listening now and thinking, oh, it all makes sense now. This man bleeding from the head, eating a wrap. All right.
And actually, I got a little treat actually, because they had olive oil that they could, and I normally request that. That's why one of the reasons why I'm healthy is because I do my best to keep myself fit and healthy, and I try to stay out of hospitals so I'm still winning. But there you are. It's catching up. It's age. It's older. Being older, you're more likely to find yourself in hospital with for cancer care, etc. Other things. I mean, Rosina Doherty, she is a much more, more treatment. 2 years of treatment for cancer. I've never met this lady, but she has another campaign on Saturday, the 26th at 9 a.m. So. Another protest outside the hospital I hope to get to at 9 a.m. That's if the bus from Buncrana can get me up there by 9 a.m. I'm not too sure. I'll have to check.
Oh, maybe someone's heading up or organising a bus. It would be great. There was a great Buncrana inner show and turnout supporting Rosina. The last day, I was disappointed at the general support for that. I think, and it's not that I'm sort of saying people should protest at the hospital, don't get me wrong, but I know a lot of people would share her views. So if you do, you need to get out and support them wherever you are in the county. Because I think a lot of people were supporting the lady rather than the issue the last time out, which I can understand because she's very impressive. But if people are concerned about cancer services at Letterkenny University Hospital, they probably do need to attend that protest on the 26th. Local link apparently leave Letterkenny at 10 p.m. going to Buncrana for 10:45. I don't know if you knew about that or if that might help.
Sorry,
but local link, leave Letterkenny at 10 p.m. Yeah. to arrive at in Bunkran at 10:45. I'm told.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Hey, listen. I must check that out. Check it out, because double check it. Don't take my word for it. But it just might help into the future. Hopefully, you don't. Hopefully, that's the end of it now for you, Tony.
Thank you, Greg.
You're not up and down. Lovely to chat to you, Tony.
Yeah,
take care of yourself. Have a great day and continue good health to you. You'll be aware, I think, the Association of Garda Sergeants and Inspectors is holding its annual conference in Killarney in County Kerry this week. Declan Higgins is president of the AGSI. He joins us now. Thank you, Declan. I do appreciate your time and good morning to you.
Not at all. Thank you, Greg, and thanks for your listenership.
One, there's lots of issues, but one, of course, that seems particularly relevant to us is this new policing model that's being rolled out. What concerns might the AGSI have with it?
Yes, as you said, there's a number of issues we're discussing here today, and very high in it is the industrial relation issues between ourselves and Garda management and the government and the Department of Justice. And one of the issues that we are discussing is very high in our agenda is in relation to the operating model, which has been brought in across the country, in particular for yourselves up in Donegal. You're one of the last divisions in the country where this has been brought into. And just to give a quick bit of background to it, like this all stems from a report into the future of policing that was done in Ireland a number of years ago. And it did recommend that there should be restructuring within a Garda Síochána to take a lot of the bureaucracy and whatnot off the Gardaí, moving on to civil servants and to put in restructures of reporting and whatnot. And in theory, this is all very good. And it went ahead and Drew Harris was brought in as commissioner. And one of his main goals was to bring this in the country, or his mandate, I would say. And this has been done. And in places, it is successful. It is working in areas. However, we are finding that due to falling resources across the country, the growing population in the country, but also issues within the actual plans that they had themselves and the models they had drawn up, we're finding there is deficiencies, there is faults, and there is problems. And highest amongst those would be the movement of resources from more rural stations into the more urban hubs, where policing has been centralised out of the busier areas. And actually, the policing is done from those busier areas, where cars are then sent out into the more rural areas, which before this would have had resourcing locally in their local Garda stations. But this is, as I said, has been pulled away from them. Also, the size of some of these divisions, like Neola, Longford, Roscommon, are just absolutely enormous, and really they are workable. So our point is that while the change in review is good in itself and bringing in a new model it can be good and there is positive to it, the Garda management is completely failing to stop and review it just to see where it is falling down. And this is coming from our membership, that they are under severe stress because they are finding these problems, that they don't have the resources to do the job anymore like they used to, or even to do it properly. And management just will not listen to us.
Is it urban areas, Declan? Is it urban areas where this model is more likely to be successful?
I would agree with that statement at first, but I think in a whole, it's not serving the urban areas fully either.
So, what areas benefit from it, Declan?
I'd say the one areas that it has worked for, it has reduced the amount of paperwork and ordinary administrative work that has been moved away from Garda Síochána. Now, I will highlight that it has been replaced with an awful lot of other oversight and bureaucracy work that a lot of our members are now. They're still stuck to desks, let's be quite clear, especially members of our ranks, that's been the sergeant inspectors. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, as I said, these resources are being pulled into the urban areas, but they are then being dispatched from those areas back into the more rural areas to deal with the calls. So it's not as if all these extra resources are in these in the larger towns and are there available for policing in the larger towns. They're actually being sent out. So they're spending as much time travelling between the calls than they are actually dealing with the calls.
See, the problem about that is, especially here in Donegal, because we've got, we've got the sea to our left and the challenges faced in policing that, but we've got a border on our right that runs all the way down effectively to Bundoran. And it's not just us, and it's not just the AGSI, and it's not just the GRA that know where the gaps are. Criminals know where the gaps are. But you talk about policing in urban areas. There's no police on the streets of Bunkrana or Letterkenny or Glenties or Ballyshannon, where the you know the HQs are. So they're not in on the streets there because we're hearing those complaints. We don't see the cars out in rural Donegal. So and the guards are there. So and our calls, by the way, when we call 999 are being answered in Galway effectively. So where are the guards then to do the policing? Are they what are they doing if they're not out and about? I know they are out and about, but in the numbers that we'd have been more familiar with, Declan.
Well, absolutely, and that goes back to my point. The guards are being based into the urban areas, but they're being dispatched outwards into the larger urban areas. So when the call comes in, the call will be answered, the call will be responded to. However, the call, the car that is responding to that call is probably travelling a very large distance to get to you because they're coming from the large urban areas like Letterkenny, but they have to travel all the way out to where the call is.
I thought so we were sold out police.
They're not walking on the street, driving in the car trying to get to the call, you see.
Declan, sorry to cut across you there, I didn't mean to, but my understanding when this was first being floated is that rather than sitting in stations, these patrol cars would be out and about and better positioned to respond to calls and to be more visible. I mean, that's what people explained to me on this program was going to happen. But obviously, that's clearly not happening because, you're saying it isn't. And we're not seeing it either, for that matter.
Yes, I think the evidence is clearly there for people to, for everyone to see. And that is exactly the point, Greg, that we're trying to highlight, is that if there's part of the model that isn't working, like the actual resourcing and the frontline policing, well, please stop forcing it in. Stop it. Examine it. See where the problems are, and see how we can rectify it before we keep pushing it forward. And I will give you an example. And falling resources does have a lot to do with this. We have to be frank about that. But when the operating model was first coming into divisions, management clearly told us it took you needed about, I think it was around 20 to 22 inspectors in a division to bring this in, because a lot of the work has moved on to the inspector rank. Up in Donegal now, and they're talking about introducing the operating model, they're now saying that you only need about 15, 16 inspectors to do it. And our point is, well, hang on, how come it was a couple of years ago you needed at least 20? And now you're saying this is the new number and it's reducing. And yet the workload isn't changing. That doesn't make sense to us. And we believe that what they're trying to do is just trying to force in the final parts of this change so people can stand up and say, we've done our job, we've finished here, and walk away. And we don't think that is serving the communities, and it's certainly not serving in Gardaí Síochána.
There is a sense
There
is a sense too that the policing in this country is being run to chase the headlines. In other words, you know, the Dublin media is, and I don't mean that disparaging, the Dublin media is pretty quiet about policing at the moment because there's quite a few Gardaí walking the streets of Dublin, and that's what you read. That's because a lot of resources are being sent to Dublin. Do you get where I'm coming from here? Their sense is that once Dublin's okay, the Northwest will be okay, because a lot of our policing decisions seem reactionary.
Yes, I think reactionary there is a very important word to use there. And listen, politics always will get involved in resourcing and policing. But also, secondly, our theme of our conference down here the next couple of days is the business of policing versus policing as a business. And we believe what's also happened too over the last number of years is they've moved away from leadership being there about, and it's solely about police and how we best police. We've now moved into metrics, we've moved into charts, we've moved into statistics, we've moved into PowerPoint presentations. And that's not policing. And it doesn't, and you cannot get a clear picture of the situations within communities and on the ground using statistics. And if people are not reporting, and we hear this certainly in Dublin and other areas, that people aren't reporting crime. So immediately your statistics are under question. However, this that will never be spoken about.
All right.
And so I think that's where we're saying it's very important that both management and the government listen to especially our association, because the sergeant inspectors, we're the glue that makes all the managerial policies work on the ground.
But just on that point, also, if you don't mind.
We are the conduit.
Declan,
I think we're very important because we are the conduit that brings the information from the ground up to management and into government.
There are issues. There are issues in the health service or housing. You know, there's a lot of issues in this country, but there's very few. Sort of, you don't hear nurses and consultants speaking out all the time about what's wrong in the health service and how it can be fixed, or even necessarily those in the building trade. Yet we have this situation where we have the GRA, the AGSI, very vocal on the ground. The people that are implementing some of these changes speaking to a man and woman saying, look, this isn't working. This is hindering how we can do our job. This is not a great use of resources. Yet time and time again, we've got the Minister for Justice and a new Minister for Justice, and we've got the Garda Commissioner very clearly wanting a different way of doing things, sticking their feet in and saying, we know best. What is actually going on? Why is it? Why would it be so hard, or why is the resistance to at least listen and take on board the concerns from Garda representative associations?
Yeah, you have a number of points there, Craig, and it is a very good question. Firstly, on nurses, now that I have to say, I think that the nurses' unions are very, very strong, especially when you hear about the statistics and the figures and problems they have in their emergency departments and all that. So I do believe that the nurses are very strong in advocating too. But I think at times they have similar problems to ourselves where the people just aren't listening. The reason why the AGSI and the GRA and the Gardaí can be so vocal about it, because I think it is because we are so invested in our work. We are part of those communities that we work in, and that really gets us invested into ensuring that the work we do is being done properly, and also it's serving our community, because they are our own families too. We take a call out to an elderly couple that might have an issue. We go out there, you're meeting your own parents, and you'd like to think that your own parents are receiving the same service you are giving to those people you're going out to the call to. And I think that's why we can be so vocal about it. And again, it's to emphasise, this is not for any increase in paying conditions for our membership or for ourselves. All we're looking for is to try and get the work that we're doing to work better for the communities. That's what we're seeking here.
Okay, two quickies, if you don't mind.
And all we're asking for is... Yep, absolutely.
Okay, stop and search. Jim O'Callum pushing through with these plans, it would seem. We know from looking at Britain... It works out bad for police, because it's police who are at the front line. They're seen as the bad guys, certainly within certain communities, because, you know, then it starts talking about it's being targeted or there's profiling and all that kind of stuff. How concerned, if at all, or how supportive, in fact, are the AGSI for Gardaí to have greater stop and search powers?
Unfortunately, Craig, we haven't had sight of any details around to that, so it's very hard to comment on it. We're always positive towards anything that will help us do our job better. I think I've got that point across already. But to be honest, to comment on something that happened, we haven't had seen or sight of. I just can't comment on it.
No, I understand that, and that's fair. The one thing that did come up, and it's the last, I know you're busy, it's the last one, is concerns about Gardaí of all ranks being filmed in the course of their duty, citizen journalism, or whatever one might want to call it. I don't think the AGSI in its motion has sort of given a solution to this, because that's the problem, right? It's how you actually sort this out. What is there an agreement as what you would like to see done? Because there's concerns over Garda security and, of course, the security of their families, etc. But then there is also the right for people to film in public, providing they're not breaking the law or otherwise. Does the AGSI have a solution to this?
Solutions, I think, first, I'm going to break that into two parts. Firstly, for the examples you give, the citizen journalist and whatnot, and following members around and all that, that is a very hard one to come up with a solution for, and we don't have a solution to that. But I do think the conversation needs to be had now and have it early so we can start building towards solutions with that. But in your question, the very point part is where the people aren't really breaking any laws or they're not pushing beyond any boundaries. It's how we handle that. We can start a discussion on that. But more worryingly, we have issues where they are beginning to cross those lines. And we have a member of our own association down here in the Southwest who actually had to go to court herself and take a person and get a court injunction against a person that was... It's just short of being criminal harassment, to be quite honest with you. And yes, she had to pay her own money to do that. Now, that is a serious issue, and that we believe we can deal with. And that's where we'll be calling on the Commissioner to set up some kind of unit or something within Angardy Síochána where members who believe that lines are being crossed can report this into and start dealing with it head on straight away immediately and not let it escalate.
Yeah, fair rules have been,
there is nothing in place.
Fair rules of engagement. Fair rules of engagement, really, I think, is the middle ground there. You know, what is what steps across a line, but there does have to be a line. Okay, Declan, thanks so much for your time. I do appreciate it. Sorry, I bumped in a couple of times because I was so keen to get to everything there, but you
not at all. We're all under time pressure.
Much. All right, thanks, Declan. Declan Higgins, president of the AGSI. Coming up after 10 o'clock, of course, we've got this Tuesday's edition of Community Garda Information. So stay tuned while you hear the appeals and information from Ungada Síochána first here on the 9 till noon show. For me, the best Irish sports person ever would be Paddy Bowner. He certainly, for people of a generation, evokes some of the greatest memories. Is he the greatest ever? So he's got a good shout. Colour says, I think the Rory McIlroy hype is a distraction from bad government locally and nationally. It's a distraction for us. We have to distract ourselves sometimes and think about other things and watch other things and give priority to other things. We can't allow ourselves to be just constantly in a state of despair. You know, there is a lot in the world to be positive about, a lot in this area to be positive about, and sport brings a lot of that positivity. You know, there has to be space for to say, right, there's an issue needs looking at, but hey, there's something to be happy about, and get a balance in life. And I think that's what a lot of us are doing with the sports stories. Some of the comments about Rory on social media are shocking, saying he's a Brit. Have we really not moved on from that? Surely a win for Rory is a win for all of us. If sport doesn't unite us, what will? He himself, I think, did at one point say he felt more British than Irish, which for some people that just goes a little bit too far for them to back him then. But maybe sport should supersede all of that. But he did get involved in the politics, didn't he? So he's going to pee a few people off. Rightio, that's the first hour of Tuesday's show in the bag. It's a little bit of a shorter week because we're off on Good Friday. So we've got the Friday panel on a Thursday, the Thursday panel. But anyway, it's Tuesday. We'll focus on that. We'll take a break for the news and obituary notices. Have a listen and then rejoin us and we'll have Community Garda information.